This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Social Security. We all hope it gets us through our retirement years. But Social Security has become very controversial because it is the most expensive of all our entitlement programs. And many politicians and economists agree that we won't be able to lower the deficit unless we cut back on entitlement programs such as Social Security, welfare, Medicare, and Medicaid. President Clinton's economic package, which the Senate will soon vote on, would increase taxes on Social Security income. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Max Richman, Executive Vice President of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. We wanted him, among other things, to respond to criticisms of the Social Security system that were recently made on our program by Philip Longman, author of a forthcoming book on entitlements. First, let's hear a couple of points that Longman made about why the Social Security system needs to be reformed.
I think we have to make it closer to what it was originally intended to be, which is a social insurance program against the very real possibility that any of us may become poor in old age. Unfortunately, it has over the years evolved into something quite different than that. Currently, Social Security and Medicare together are distributing about $75 billion a year to people who earn more than $50,000 a year. And, of course, it's raising that money largely through, or exclusively through, a payroll tax on younger workers that hits the poor hardest. Again, even if we didn't need this money for investments in the future, this would simply be an unfair and untenable income redistribution system.
Now, I think most of us think of Social Security like this. During our working years, we put in a certain amount of money. Then when we retire, we get that money back, and that money sustains us in our retirement years. And it's upsetting to think that the government's going to, like, change the rules on us, and that when we retire, we're going to make less than what we expected, or less than what we were promised.
Unfortunately, it's convenient as it is to believe it. It's just not true. People retiring today can look forward to, on average, about a $32,000 a year windfall profit. That is, if you take the total amount of contributions that they've made to Social Security on average over their working lives, you adjust it for inflation. It still comes out that the average retiree today, just in the Social Security program, is getting it back about two and a half times what he paid in. Or put another way, he'll get back in the first 10 years of his retirement what he paid in, yet the life tables tell us on average they'll live 20 years.
The Social Security system was started under the Roosevelt administration in 1935. Were there certain New Deal assumptions that you think are no longer true in the 1990s?
Actually, it's not the assumptions that were made in the 1930s so much as the assumptions that were made in the 1970s and 60s when the Social Security program was dramatically expanded. And those assumptions were that the baby boom that was going on at that time would continue forever, that there would be ever higher birth rates in the United States so that you'd have ever more people paying into the system, and probably more profoundly, that the next generation would grow up to be many, many times more affluent than the current generation. You probably remember some of the atmosphere of the early 1970s, but this was a time when economists testified before Congress and seriously estimated that within 20 years, the American workforce would be working an average of 20 hours a week and making four or five times the average wage of workers in 1970. Well, I mean, it would have been nice if it was true, but it didn't happen. Unfortunately, they structured the financing of Social Security and many other entitlements as if it were going to happen. And that is the key policy error that was made.
I know that you think that Social Security is inequitably distributed, that people who have a lot of money end up getting more money than those who really need the money. Do you have any statistics handy about how the money, for instance, was distributed in 1992? Who got what?
For Social Security program in itself, spent $55 billion last year conveying benefits to families that had income over $50,000 a year. Now, just to put that in perspective, if we took $10 billion and applied it specifically to the problem of eliminating totally poverty among the elderly, $10 billion would do it. If you took $10 billion and targeted it at the remaining elderly population that is poor, that would be enough to lift every one of them above the poverty line. And yet we spent five times that much money, $55 billion, paying Social Security benefits to people who typically use them for paying for their green fees and traveling to tropical ports of call and tooting around the country in an RV with a bumper sticker that says we're outspending our children's inheritance. There's just no reason to be spending that kind of money on people that don't need it, not in the current context.
An excerpt of an earlier interview with Philip Longman. He writes for Florida Trend magazine. The National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare is afraid that critiques like Longman's could lead to the eventual dismantling of the Social Security system. Max Richman is the executive vice president of the National Committee. He says that when Clinton was running for president, he promised not to touch Social Security, but his new budget proposal includes an increased tax on benefits.
Under current law, and for the last 10 years, Social Security beneficiaries have been paying tax on their benefits, half of their benefits, if their incomes exceeded certain thresholds, and that is $25,000 per year for an individual, $32,000 per year for a couple. The proposal in the Clinton budget plan, which has now been passed as part of the House reconciliation bill, would raise that level of taxation from 50% to 85%. Now, keep in mind, that's a 70% increase on the tax on Social Security benefits. Another deficiency in the taxation of benefits issue, as it's been prepared by the President and passed by the House of Representatives, is that in 1983, for the first time ever in 50 years, nearly 50 years, Social Security benefits were taxed. That revenue from the increase in taxation was going to go back to the trust fund, shore up the trust fund, make it solvent for the next 50, 60 years. Now, the revenue is going to be used not only to reduce the deficit, not do anything for the trust fund, the increased revenue from the increase in taxation, but the thresholds at which an individual begins paying taxes remains the same. Now, in 1984, the first year that beneficiaries had to pay tax on their Social Security benefits, 8% of beneficiaries paid the tax. This year, it's 22%. By the year 1997, nearly 30% of Social Security beneficiaries will be paying the tax. These thresholds of $25,000 for an individual and $32,000 a couple have remained the same for the last 10 years. And it's very similar to what's known as bracket creep in the income tax program. Just by virtue of getting your cost of living adjustment and inflation, you can be moved into this category of beneficiaries that have to pay tax on their benefits. That's not fair. Those thresholds should have been indexed in the first place and should continue to be indexed.
The president's plan would raise the amount of income that was taxable from 50% to 85%. What would happen to the extra money that was generated by the added tax?
Well, that's a very good question. Just by way of background, the first time Social Security benefits were ever taxed, beginning in 1984 at the 50% level, seniors were reluctant to go along with that, but they did so. And one of the reasons they did so was that was part of the overall rescue of the Social Security program. Those revenues derived from that taxation were plowed back into the Social Security Trust Fund to make sure that the system was solvent, would pay benefits for current and future retirees until the year 2043. But now, this additional revenue, and it's around $30 billion over 5 years, that's not going to the Social Security Trust Fund. That's going to go to reduce the deficit. Now, here's a program in government, Social Security, one of the very, very few programs in government that is running at a surplus. And it's going to be used to balance the budget, to help balance the budget. Where's the fairness in that philosophy? We fail to see it.
Well, if Social Security is running at a surplus, why not take some money from Social Security and use it to balance the budget?
Well, because that money is dedicated money. It's a trust fund. It's supposed to be used to pay benefits, not to to balance the federal budget. I guess what our perception is, Social Security did not create the deficit. Why are you using Social Security to help solve the deficit?
What impact would it have on the future of Social Security if more money were taken out of the fund and used to fight the deficit?
Well, this money is not being taken out of the fund. It's being taken out of senior citizens' pockets. It's really a backdoor way of cutting benefits. Instead of saying your benefits are going to be lower because we're going to reduce your cost of living adjustment or reduce the formula by which benefits are derived, we're just going to tax your benefits. So the trust fund is not going to be impacted, but the individual beneficiaries, the bottom line is, they're going to have less left of their Social Security checks by the end of the year. In effect, the average person would be giving up 1 month of Social Security. That's what the additional tax on benefits for the average beneficiary will add up to by the end of the year, roughly 1 month of a Social Security beneficiary's income.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Max Richman. He's the Executive Vice President of the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Let me get to some of the more general criticisms that have been made about the Social Security system. And some of these criticisms were actually recently made on Fresh Air by one of our guests. One of the criticisms is that people now are getting more money than they paid in, more money than they paid in plus interest. Do you think that's true, and do you think that that's fair?
Well, for many years, there was quite a bit of truth to that. And people that were retiring were getting back all that they put in, all that their employer put in, plus interest in a fairly short amount of time. But that's no longer the case. People retiring now, this year, it will take them roughly 11, 12 years to recoup their investment in Social Security, their employer's investment, plus the interest. So while that may have been a criticism that some thought was relevant and to the debate of Social Security in years past, it really has no relevance anymore, in my opinion.
One criticism made about Social Security is that today's working class, which is struggling to support themselves on their paychecks, are paying payroll taxes that are being used to fund Social Security for affluent retirees. Do you think that that's a legitimate criticism? Do you think that the affluent should be making less than they are in Social Security?
There are really two points that I think I need to respond to answer that question thoroughly. First of all, if you are affluent and you don't want your Social Security check, you don't have to keep it. You can send it back to the government. But to force a division among seniors as to who is entitled to a Social Security check and who is not really goes to the heart of the Social Security program. And it would be that kind of a forced division by the government, or distinction, or entitlement test, if you want to call it that. That's a popular term these days. Would be the first step towards dismantling the Social Security program. Sure, you could say if you have income of $250,000 a year, why do you need Social Security? You should be denied your Social Security. But where would that end? The Congress and the senior community and the people in this country accepted that proposition, we know darn well that very soon that threshold would start creeping down, and pretty soon you'd have very low income levels would be receiving smaller checks. Now, the reason Social Security works so well and is universally accepted is that virtually everybody participates and everybody benefits. Once you make these divisions, you're going to start taking the program apart. And that making distinctions in Social Security, such as the one you've just discussed, is the first step towards turning a social insurance program into a welfare program.
Is there anything else you would say to somebody who's struggling to get by today and feels that they're paying taxes that are supporting cruises and golf club memberships for retirees?
Well, I would say that those people should work with the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and others who have been supporting Senator Moynihan over the last couple of years. He is now the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee in cutting payroll taxes. We don't believe that payroll taxes need to be at the level that they're at. The Social Security program is building a surplus of enormous proportions. The surplus is growing. That is, more money is being taken in than is being paid out. It is growing at the rate of $1.5 billion a week. We don't need the kinds of payroll taxes that are now in place to fund Social Security. We need a sound system. We need a sound and stable reserve, enough to cover beneficiaries in the event that the economy goes downhill quickly. But we don't need that kind of payroll structure that is really hurting the working class.
There is a surplus in the Social Security system now. But a lot of younger people worry that the system will run out of money by the time that they retire. A previous guest on our show predicted that the Social Security system would be bankrupt in 17 years. What kind of shape do you think the future of Social Security is
in? Well, your previous guest should refresh his memory by looking at the Social Security Actuaries Report. Those figures by the Social Security actuaries are given credence by everyone in government, and those figures show that even using intermediate economic assumptions, the Social Security system is solvent and has money to pay beneficiaries till about the year 2041 to 2043. Now, that's almost 50 years from now. At some point when we get close to that magic year, the Congress will have to look at benefits, will have to look at payroll taxes, will have to look at the year qualifying for benefits, and consider making adjustments at that point. But for the next nearly 50 years, the Social Security system is sound. Now, I don't know any program in government that goes beyond 50 years. Most of these budget plans, you know, only deal 5 years out, and that's considered plenty of time to make adjustments.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Max Richman, and he's vice president of the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Max Richman is my guest, executive vice president of the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Are there inequities in the Social Security system that you would like to see addressed, even though you don't want the system means-tested?
Oh, there are many, many inequities. There are some ways in which Social Security could be improved. It could be fair. It could provide better service. I'll give you a couple. First of all, there is in law now something that's called the earnings test. If you are a Social Security beneficiary and you earn above about $10,000 a year because you need to work to make ends meet, Social Security, as you know, does not take care of everything, you will be penalized and lose some of your benefits. You will lose $1 in benefits for every $3 you earn above that threshold. I think it's about $10,200 a year right now. That law makes no sense. That law was passed back during the Depression when we had an enormous unemployment rate in this country, and the theory behind the law was to encourage older workers to leave the workforce. If you penalized them, took away some of their benefits if they worked, they were less likely to stay in the workforce when they reached retirement age and less likely to return to the workforce. Well, that law is a relic of a bygone era, and it makes no sense at this point in time to penalize senior citizens who need to work so they don't have to make the decision between buying their medicine or paying their gas bill.
People who don't have a lot of savings would try to make extra income while they're on Social Security by working. And as you said, their wages over $10,000 would be taxed. But people who are more affluent have income generated by dividends on stocks and bonds. Do you think that there's an inequity there?
Well, there certainly is. You know, if you have invested your money and you're you're in a position where you can earn income through interest and dividends, stocks, bonds, CDs, you can have as much income in that way as you have been able to establish for yourself, and it's not going to affect your Social Security. But if you have to go out and work, and earn money, then you're going to be penalized.
There's currently a ceiling of $56,000 on salary for the payroll tax that goes into Social Security. Would you explain that and give us your opinion of it?
Well, under current law, there's a formula that applies to how much of your income is subject to Social Security tax, how much of it is withheld, your FICA tax. That goes up every year a little bit based on inflation, and there's an indexing formula. And as you point out, this year it's around $57,000. After you reach that $57,000 mark, an employee will be no longer required to have his Social Security tax withheld. In other words, what that means is if somebody is making $56,000 or $57,000 a year, he or she is paying as much into the Social Security system as somebody making $157,000 or $257,000 or any unlimited amount. That is the point at which this year the individual will not be required to pay into the Social Security system. There's an awful lot of revenue that could be derived for very important programs if that ceiling was raised. I think if it were raised $20,000 or $30,000 per year up to, let's say, $75,000 or $85,000 a year, you could derive enough revenue to fund, for example, a comprehensive long-term care health care program for all people.
Max Richmond, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
And Max Richmond is Executive Vice President of the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.